Thank you for joining me here on the Food Pod for Humanity, brought to you by the Columbia Climate School's Food for Humanity Initiative. My name is Josh Bidluija, and welcome to episode one of our limited series podcast on food waste. I am so excited for you to hear from our guest, Dr. Jess Fonzo, professor of climate at the Columbia Climate School and director of the Food for Humanity Initiative. She's going to help us orient ourselves about the big picture regarding food waste, including information on how food waste impacts climate change and what's at stake when food is wasted.
So what is lost when food is wasted? Well, it's a lot. Food uses an incredible amount of resources all along the food supply chain, in the way food is produced, it's the way it's stored, the way it's transported. Growing food uses fertilizer, it uses arable land, pesticides, energy, and water. And all of these inputs can degrade the environment through nutrient runoff and can also create biodiversity loss. So we're losing a lot, not just for ourselves and our own nutrition that we're wasting, but for the environment and the planet as well.
But before we get into that, I wanted to give you a bit more information about why you're hearing my voice on the airways. I'm happy to be a member of the Food for Humanity Initiative, which sits in the Columbia Climate School. We are a group concerned with food systems and climate change and the interaction between them. Allow me to quote from Jess's 2021 book, Can Fixing Dinner Fix the Planet? The foods we eat are much more than just a source of sustenance. They have direct and substantial impacts on the nutrition and health of individuals and populations, the planet's natural resources and climate change, and structural equity and social justice challenges of societies. Food connects us to the world. It also dictates, to a degree most people don't realize, the kind of world we live in today and the kind of world we will occupy in the future. End quote. Now let's back up a bit to define an important phrase. What are food systems? Let's hear from Jess for a definition.
Food systems are the dynamic process of growing, storing, processing, packaging, transporting, selling, consuming, and wasting food. They play a significant role in safeguarding food security and diets and well-being. The interesting part about food systems is that they're influenced by a range of actors from the local to the global scale. At the same time, there are many drivers that are influencing food systems, be it urbanism, climate change, population pressure, politics, globalization, trade. All of these drivers are influencing food systems in positive and negative ways.
Joshua here again. So food systems are working all the time, all around us, to feed communities around the world. Food is so special and so vital to every day of our lives, and we sometimes, probably more often than not, forget how much goes into getting food onto our plate. I think Jess does a great job summarizing the relationship between food systems and climate change. Let's hear more from her.
One of the big issues is that food systems are highly vulnerable to climate change, but also instigators of climate change. So there's an interesting relationship of how food systems are part of the problem when we talk about climate change, but also part of the solution.
Allow me to bring in my colleague, Danny Din, also from the Food for Humanity Initiative, to tell us more about the risks related to climate change and food systems.
Our food systems are not only driving climate change, but are also heavily impacted by climate events. The present and future risk of climate variability and climate change affect all aspects and stages of the agri-food systems and the food supply chains. All around the world, farming systems can differ widely in terms of geography, management practice, whether it's rain-fed or irrigated, till or no-till soil, the different technologies and techniques that are used, such as chemical input or the machinery and equipment, the size of the plot, or the size of the herd, and the scale, whether it's operated at a family level, cooperative, or a company. the productivity and yield levels, the local context of land and water usage and availability can also vary greatly, whether naturally or due to competing demands. GDP from the agriculture sector is still a huge part of many developing economies where farming is predominantly conducted by smallholder farmers, families, pastoralists. Smallholder farmers who operate on a limited scale and with fewer capabilities and resources are much more vulnerable to the shocks and disruptions of extreme climate events. Any reduction in the yield volume or quality of the yield or the timing of the processing and marking of crops can have a big impact on smallholders, farmers' income and livelihoods. And all of these can have ripple effect on gender equality, education, health, childhood development, and so on.
Thanks, Danny. Are you convinced you should be concerned yet? Well, the Climate School at Columbia University recognized the concern and need for the creation of the Food for Humanity Initiative to investigate, educate, and advocate for healthy, equitable, and sustainable food systems. Let's invite Jess back to explain what the initiative is and how the work we're doing responds to this food systems climate change connection.
The Food for Humanity Initiative brings together many different faculty, staff, and students who are working on food across Columbia. We're also engaging with external partners with the vision for a positive and just transformation of food systems that supports climate resilience, reduces greenhouse gas emission, promotes environmental sustainability, provides reliable livelihoods, and ensures access to healthy diets for better nutrition and health for everyone. We're supporting this vision by working on research, policy, and education initiatives. And it's a really exciting time for the Food for Humanity to be launched within Columbia's Climate School because we have many people working on food systems across the entire university. And they bring with them big networks of internal and external partners. And we believe that food systems, while challenged, are a potential solution for sustainable development and climate mitigation and adaptation. But it's one of these issues that requires everyone to work together from multiple disciplines, multiple systems and sectors. So under the Food for Humanity Initiative, we are curating this collaboration and partnership to try to address this grand challenge.
Joshua, that again. This podcast gives us a platform to deep dive into topics that not only interest our team, but hopefully spark some curiosity and conversations amongst you as New Yorkers, as people interested in climate and food and nutrition related areas, as people who gotta eat, and as citizens of this one planet we live on, for now anyway. Thank you for allowing us to introduce ourselves as the Food for Humanity Initiative. We'll put our contact info in the show notes so you can find other ways to get to know us better. Now, without any further ado, let's hear more from Jess about the topic at hand. First up, what is food waste? How is it different from food loss? And what is the scale of both?
So food loss and food waste is really the throwing out or discarding of food. That can happen at multiple steps throughout the food system, be it on farms where food is damaged or it doesn't fit for purpose, the ability to sell those foods to wholesalers. So there's a lot of loss on farms. Food loss can also happen across supply chains. As food is stored, it's processed and packaged, and it's transported, there's a lot of loss that happens across that chain, be it damage during transportation or processing, or spoilage because of poor storage, not having cold chain storage. All of these things can contribute to food loss. It is usually unintentional and due to issues like labor shortages, storage and handling issues, transportation as well. Now, food waste predominantly happens at the tail end of the supply chain at the retail level and the household level. We see a lot of waste happen at that stage in which food is discarded or it expires and is no longer edible. There's two organizations that track food loss and waste. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization tracks food loss, and the UN Environmental Program tracks food waste. One third of food produced globally goes to waste. About 14% of food is lost globally after harvest, but before reaching retailers, while another 19% is wasted at the retail, food service, and household levels. There is a direct relationship between food waste and climate, and that generates about 8 to 10% of all greenhouse gas emissions. Food is the single largest category of material placed in municipal landfills where it emits methane, a powerful greenhouse gas. Municipal solid waste landfills are the third largest source of human-related methane emissions in the United States, accounting for approximately 14% of these emissions, which is incredible.
Joshua here again. That's an important distinction between food loss and waste. I decided to focus this first series on food waste for two reasons. First, because of its closer connection to us, all of us, as consumers who almost certainly interact with food at the household, retail, and food service levels frequently, if not daily. Secondly, I wanted to stress that 19% of food wasted is a big deal. It's one-fifth of all the food that is grown for human consumption, and the equivalent of more than 1 billion metric tons of food in a world where more than 700 million people are going hungry. Jess mentioned methane gas. It's one of the greenhouse gases and plays an important role in the overall warming of the planet. We could probably devote an entire podcast series just on greenhouse gases and their effect on the environment. But our time is limited, so I'm going to have Dani come back instead. She's really great at giving a crash course about food systems and greenhouse gas emissions.
In addition to creating significant environmental impacts and driving deforestation, water crises, and declining biodiversity, our food systems are responsible for one-third of global anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions that drive climate change. Now, when we say food systems emissions, the accounting is looking at every step along the value chain, from production to processing, packaging, transport, consumption, all the way to the end of life when food byproducts and waste end up in landfills. If we consider the different types of food we eat, meat and animal products emit much more greenhouse gases than, say, most fruits and vegetables. This is because raising animals requires significantly more input resources like land, fresh water, growing feedstock to produce the equivalent unit of consumable food. Over half of the food system's greenhouse gas emissions is carbon dioxide, and then 35% is methane. Why is this noteworthy? Well, carbon dioxide, CO2, is already a well-known climate change driver due to its warming effect, and its high cumulative concentration and the large proportion amongst all of the greenhouse gases that are present in our atmosphere. Once emitted, CO2 remains in the atmosphere forever unless it is sequestered by natural processes or plants. And fun fact, because carbon is so long-lasting, you can do carbon forensics to know exactly how long it's been around and where it came from, just like radiocarbon dating techniques in archaeology. Methane gas, on the other hand, is present in our atmosphere at a much smaller concentration, and methane has a relatively short atmospheric lifetime of one decade. This means that it takes about 10 years for released methane to break down into CO2 and water. But here's the kicker. Methane has a much greater warming potential, trapping heat much more effectively than carbon dioxide. So its comparative impact is 28 times greater than that of carbon dioxide over a 100-year period. Therefore, when we talk about climate change mitigation, or reducing the contributive drivers of climate change, We can't forget that there are different types of greenhouse gases, and our emissions reduction strategies must target these different drivers of the most highly concentrated and most potent greenhouse gases, whether it be the burning of fossil fuels or the activities taking place across our global food systems. Whether you are a devoted data nerd or just want to better visualize and digest these figures, we invite you to check out Edgar Food, that's EDGAR-FOOD, a global emission inventory of greenhouse gases and air pollutants from the food systems by Kripa, Salazzo, and Guizzardi et al., 2021. And we'll make sure to add this in the footnote for you to find.
That was a fun fact about the carbon forensics to track where carbon has been and how long it's been around. And I appreciate Danny raising the issue of emissions reduction strategies being developed and implemented with the understanding that different greenhouse gases function differently and require tailored responses. But for now, back to food waste specifically. What are the biggest culprits in food waste, including in terms of what foods are most often wasted?
The types of foods that are typically wasted tend to be those that are perishable, and ironically, they tend to be those that are very nutrient dense. Take fruits and vegetables. That constitutes almost a third of total food waste. But we also have to be thinking about dairy products, animal source foods. Those too can be quickly spoiled if cold chain storage is not in place or they sit in the fridge too long. So some of these foods, which are incredibly important for a healthy diet, are wasted, and that can often lead to wasted nutrients as well. What's more is that most of the world's food waste comes from households. Out of the total food wasted in 2022, households were responsible for 631 million tons, equivalent to 60%. Whereas the food service and retail sectors account for the other 40%.
So now that we have a better understanding of the scale of how much food we waste, how detrimental food waste is to our environment, and Jess has explained that household waste is the biggest contributor to food waste, what can we do as individuals who are concerned about this issue and want to make a positive change? Let's hear Jess's advice.
And among individuals, you can do a lot to prevent food waste. When shopping, you can be mindful, maybe not stocking up so much for weeks at a time and instead shopping for a few days ahead. Also when shopping, you can look at expiration dates. At the household, there's a lot you can do. Often our refrigerators are stock full. Reach to the back of the refrigerator. See what's hiding behind there that could be used. If food is starting to go off or go bad, think about throwing those foods into a pot and making broth or a stock. If fruit's about to go off, boil it with some sugar and make some jams. You can also make casseroles. It's incredible what you can do with food scraps and food that is not quite perfect and a little bit over-ripened. It can be used to make some wonderful foods. Also, use your freezer. If you feel that there's some foods that you won't eat right away, throw them in the freezer and use them later. It's incredible how far your food can go.
Thank you very much for those tips, Jess. I hope you, the listener, learn something new and walk away considering the efforts you can make to reduce your personal impact. Food waste really underscores what the Food for Humanity initiative seeks to better understand, that intersection of food systems and climate change. In future episodes, we'll look at food waste solutions at a bigger scale, but we wanted to start in our homes with our personal responsibilities toward the environment and our food systems. I wanted to supplement with a few things I found in doing research for the podcast. Calculating food waste can be complex. That is part of why we needed Jess to explain the fact that while food waste and food loss are related, they have separate definitions and happen at different points along the supply chain. The UN Environment Program is expanding its efforts to have countries track and report on their food waste figures as part of SDG 12.3, which aims to halve per capita global food waste at the retail and consumer levels and reduce food losses along production and supply chains, including post-harvest losses by 2030. I also want to acknowledge that in some ways, food waste at the consumer level is inevitable. There are parts of certain foods that cannot reasonably be consumed, like bones, shells, rinds, and peels, for example. Although back to Jess's point, they can be used to flavor broths and jams before they get tossed. In future episodes, we will explore better ways to dispose of food from your home, but the point remains that some inedible byproducts occur when we buy, cook, and consume food. Jess mentioned expiration dates, and I wanted to build off that. These pesky labels have done a great job scaring people into throwing away perfectly edible and delicious food. Besides infant formula, the dates you see on foods in the United States are not an indicator of safety and are not required by federal law, according to the USDA's website. Most of those are just the manufacturer's best guess at quality and freshness. I'm not advocating eating rotting food. But that bag of wilting spinach a few days past its best if used by date can be cooked in a pan and enjoyed. The yogurt with a little water separated on the top, stir it up. Maybe add a handful of that stale cereal from your pantry in, and you've got breakfast. In a lot of cases, you can trust your senses in addition to the guidance from the stamped expiration date. If it looks moldy or smells off, probably best to relegate it to the compost bin. And I know that everyone's constitution is different, so please do what works best for you. If you do insist on following the expiration dates, pay attention while you're shopping and choose a date that will give you enough time to consume what you're buying. Jess mentioned it, but don't discount your freezer as a way to press pause on expiration dates. I always have a loaf of bread in there that will thaw to be used later, just the same as it would if I bought it from the supermarket the day before. Overripe fruits and herbs can be chucked in the freezer and either blended in a smoothie or thawed to be used when you're ready. I also wanted to highlight the economic toll of food waste. Food that is unsold and then tossed at the retail level can lead to increased prices. Not to mention that wasted food takes up room in landfills, which require maintenance via our tax dollars. Additionally, there is the cost of climate interventions that are and will be needed due to the methane gas released by organic waste in those landfills. That will inevitably fall to taxpayers as well. Us everyday consumers feel the hurt of food waste in our individual wallets as well. Us individual consumers feel the hurt of food waste on our individual wallets. It's annoying to spend your hard-earned money at the supermarket and then have to turn around and throw away food that went bad, maybe just because you forgot to rotate the items in your fridge or pantry, to use the oldest products first. I hope you'll join me for the rest of this limited series podcast on food waste. We'll be speaking to other experts from around the city, Columbia University, the New York City Department of Sanitation, and a food rescue organization headquartered in Brooklyn, to get their perspectives and opinions on food waste. This has been the Food Pod for Humanity. Special thanks to our guests, Jess Fonzo and Danny Din, both from the Food for Humanity Initiative. I want to hear from you. If you have any questions or suggestions for future podcast topics, please email me at foodsystems@climate.columbia.edu and put podcast in the title. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to ensure you get the next episode drop. Until next time.